Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanatari. Yamuna Tira Vanatari. Yamuna Tira Vanatari. Yamuna Tira Vanatari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Nityananda, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol.
Inam Sankirtana Yajna Ki हरे कृष्ण महामंत्र की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं उदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम सेवेंथ कैंटो चैप्टर टू टेक्स्ट 48। वितथा fruitless. Sorry, just want to read the first Sanskrit word by word. It's easier to chant the verse. Vittatha abhiniveshah ayam yat guneshu artha drikvachah yatha मनोरथः स्वप्नः सर्वं ऐन्द्रियकं मृषा फॉल्स। ओके, वितथाभिनिवेशोऽयं यत्कुनेष्व अर्थदृग्वचः यथा मनोरथ स्वप्ना सर्वं ऐन्द्रियकं मृषा वितथाभिनिवेशोऽयं यद्गुणेष्वर्थदृग्वचः यथा मनोरथ स्वप्नः सर्वं ऐन्द्रियकं मृषा वितथाभिनिवेशोऽयं यद्गुणेष्व अर्थदृग्वचः यथा मनोरथ स्वप्ना सर्वं ऐन्द्रियकं मृषा वितथाभिनिवेशोऽयं यद्गुणेष्व अर्थदृग्वचः यथा मनोरथ स्वप्नः सर्वं ऐन्द्रियकं मृषा वितथाभिनिवेशोऽयं यद्गुणेष्वर्थदृग्वचः यथा मनोरथ स्वप्ना सर्वं ऐन्द्रियकं मृषा वितथाभिनिवेशोऽयं यद्गुणेष्वर्थदृग्वचः यथा मनोरथ स्वप्ना सर्वं ऐन्द्रियकं मृषा वितथाभिनिवेशोऽयं यद्गुणेष्वर्थदृग्वचः यथा मनोरथ स्वप्ना सर्वं ऐन्द्रियकं मृषा वितथाभिनिवेशोऽयं यद्गुणेष्वर्थदृग्वचः यथा मनोरथ स्वप्नः सर्वं ऐन्द्रियकं मृषा वितथा फ्रूटलेस अभिनिवेशो अभिनिवेशः द कंसेप्शन अयम दिस यत विच गुणेषु इन द मोड्स ऑफ मटेरियल नेचर अर्थ एज अ फैक्ट दृक् वचः द सीइंग एंड टॉकिंग ऑफ यथा जस्ट एज मनोरथः अ मेंटल कंकॉक्शन डे ड्रीम स्वप्नः अ ड्रीम सर्वं एवरीथिंग ऐन्द्रियकम् produced by the senses, mrisha, false. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. It is fruitless to see and talk of the material modes of nature and their resultant so-called happiness and distress as if they were factual. When the mind wanders during the day and a man begins to think himself extremely important, or when he dreams at night and sees a beautiful woman enjoying with him, these are merely false dreams. Similarly, the happiness and distress caused by the material senses should be understood to be meaningless. Purport: the happiness and distress derived from the activities of the material senses are not actual happiness and distress. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita speaks of happiness that is transcendental to the material conception of life. Sukham atyantikam yattad buddhi grayam atindriyam. When our senses are purified of material contamination, they become atindriya, transcendental senses. And when the transcendental senses are engaged in the service of the master of the senses, Rishikesha, one can derive real transcendental pleasure. Whatever distress or happiness we manufacture by mental concoction through the subtle mind has no reality, but is simply a mental concoction. One should therefore not imagine so-called happiness through mental concoction. Rather, the best course is to engage the mind in the service of the Lord, Rishikesha, and thus feel real blissful. Paragraph. There is a Vedic statement, Apama Somam Amrita Abhuma Apsarobhir Viharama. With reference to such a conception, one wants to go to the heavenly planets to enjoy with the young girls there and drink somarasa. Such imaginary pleasure, however, has no value, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.29. Antavatu phalam thesham tad bhavati alpamedasam. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Even if by fruitive activity or worship of the demigods, one is elevated to the higher planetary systems for sense enjoyment, his situation is condemned in Bhagavad Gita as antavat, perishable. The happiness one enjoys in this way is like the pleasure of embracing a young woman in a dream. For some time it may be pleasing, but actually the basic principle is false. The mental concoctions of happiness and distress in this material world are compared to dreams because of their falseness. All thoughts of obtaining happiness by using the material senses have a false background and therefore have no meaning. Hare Krishna. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyasya Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukham Karoti Vashalam Fungum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatavaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam. So Hiranyakashipu is continuing to speak here and he is citing the story of Yamaraj speaking to the wives of king. Yeah. So here Hiranyakashipu is speaking. This is like Krishna consciousness, you know, 101, one can say basic philosophy. We often hear the topic, the search for happiness. So here Hiranyakashipu is explaining how the conditioned soul, how he actually looks for happiness, in what realm he looks for happiness, and then what are the means that he, you know, tries to find them. So here, the translation is saying, it is fruitless to see and talk of the material modes of nature and their resultant so-called happiness and distress as if they were factual. Prabhupada also, in many of his classes and purports, he talks about daydreams. So there are daydreams and there are night dreams. And he compares that the conditioned soul that is sojourning, you know, going from one life form to the other, trying to find happiness in this material world, you know, it's like a daydream. Unfortunately, the living entity doesn't realize, the conditioned living entity doesn't realize that it is a dream. It is transmigrating from one body to the other. And then those bodies, they impose limitations upon him or her as to the limits of, you know, how much he can, how he can try to enjoy, you know, what he can enjoy, like that. So we see, you know, what is enjoyment, you know, for the pig, for example, you know, is poison for somebody else, another conditioned living entity. There are 8.4 million species of life, and the living entity, the conditioned living entity, wants to enjoy in different ways. And so the Supreme Lord, he has created these different species of life through which he can enjoy, the living entity can enjoy. And as we also discussed from Bhagavad Gita, so there are three modes of material nature. And so these three modes then further mix, they become nine, then they further mix, they become 81, like that, you know, the combination, the percentages of the mixture creates the varieties of modes of material nature. And Bhagavad Gita explains how these 8.4 million species of life, they are actually catering to, you know, the living entities, conditioned living entities that are in different modes of material nature. You know. And so it's perfectly, you know, suitable for that. And as we are discussing here, as we are reading this verse here, the centerpiece of the sojourn, one can say, is the material mind. Of course, it begins with, you know, the somehow or the other, the conditioned soul turning its attention away from the Supreme Lord, and then one gets the false ego, and the material intelligence, the material mind, and the material senses. But where does this conception of, you know, happiness and distress, where does it actually reside? So again, many places in this purport, Prabhupada talks about this mental concoction, you know, on the mental platform. So the mind has different ideas, you know, that it makes different plans, and then according to those plans, it is ascertains whether something is, you know, suitable for it or not suitable for it. Something will bring its happiness or distress. So all sorts of material calculations are going on. And the conditioned soul is evaluating, the material mind is evaluating, you know, what you know, what is good for me, what is bad for me, that. And as we hear in Bhagavad Gita, it is impossible to actually conquer, to control the mind. To controlling the mind is like trying to control the wind. So if we try to do it on our own accord, it will not happen. It will be defeated again and again. And so somehow or the other, we have to understand that this process of Krishna consciousness is a descending process. On my own accord, I cannot, you know, control the mind. This is there even in the Damodar pastime. So Krishna has unlimited energies, and one of his energies, one of his shaktis is Kripa Shakti. It is mentioned that it is sort of his compassion for the living entities that, you know, rules over almost everything else, every other of his potency. So when the living entity, when he sees the conditioned living entity, somehow or the other, when it comes in contact with, you know, the devotees of the Lord, and then it hears about the real goal of life and what is real happiness, and the living entity, he wants to act, you know, on that knowledge that the living entity is acquiring, then the Supreme Lord, he sends help. He sends help in the form of scriptures, sadhus, you know, spiritual master, like that. And then the conditioned living entity, he tries to apply these principles of Krishna consciousness. And then as we try to apply, we realize that actually, you know, I have my limitations. You know, I cannot do it by myself. And then we reach out, you know, hopefully we reach out in that, you know, vulnerable condition. We reach out to the Supreme Lord or to his representatives. And we understand that actually, you know, my own effort, my own intention, sankalpa, is very, very essential, but then I can't do it alone. I need the help of others. So one begins to understand that actually this is a relationship. You know, I cannot do it alone. And one begins to somehow act in relationship with the Supreme Lord or the devotees. And then one feels some strength. You know, earlier, where the living entity was defeated, one has some experiences where he can feel that, oh, you know, the modes of material nature, they are somewhat subsiding. And things that one never thought he could do, you know, overcome, some of the deep-rooted conditionings, anarthas, he is able to overcome them. You know, because in the relationship with the Supreme Lord and the devotees, that you know, one gains spiritual strength, like Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita, Daivihi Esha Gunamai Mamaya Dharatyaya, that these three modes of material nature are impossible to overcome. But if one takes shelter of him, then he can easily overcome, you know, the three modes of material nature. So when we understand that actually I cannot do it alone, and we reach out to the Supreme Lord or his devotees, then we are acting in a relationship. And then, you know, we gain strength, we have practical experience of it. And as Prabhupada here is writing, so initially we are only, the only happiness that we know is the happiness of the senses coming in contact with sense objects. You know, that's the only happiness we know. But somehow or the other, when we engage in the devotional service, we engage these same senses, these blunt material senses, in the service of the Lord, Rishikesha. Then we experience another kind of happiness. This happiness is also being talked about in this verse. Right? And then as we experience that kind of happiness, we are further impelled to take further steps in devotional service. So it's like a fission reaction. That it's a self-perpetuating, you know, reaction. That. So of course, what it requires us to look at, you know, why we are in the process of devotional service on a regular basis. What is my intention? What is my motivation? Why am I, you know, practicing these, you know, this process of Krishna consciousness? And so when we are clear about, you know, our sankalpa, our intention, then it's blissful. We can keep going. And even though we may face some reversals, you know, on the path of, you know, this Krishna consciousness, because we are traversing it with other devotees, others who are like-minded, you know, it's blissful. Some of you know, you know, this classic, you know, movie, I guess you must have all seen, especially in the Western world, The Wizard of Oz. So it's a fantastic, I saw it, you know, some time ago. It's a beautiful movie. And there, the idea, the central idea of it is that this one girl who is in a place, and she is in a very distressful condition. And she has an idea that there is a place, you know, beyond the rainbow, you know, which is free from all these, you know, from all this distress that she's undergoing. And then so she goes, she tries to find that place, skipping many, many details. So she comes to a place, and then she's asked to follow, you know, the yellow brick road. And then so she starts a journey, you know. And then as she starts a journey, she finds that there are, you know, few other persons who also feel that they don't have some things. And they also join her in the journey. And what we see in that, you know, classic, you know, novel or a movie, there are many, many things actually. Many of the things that these persons are actually looking for, they already have them, but they don't know that they have them. You know, they've forgotten that they have them. You know, or there are all these voices that they have, they are believing, which makes, you know, think that they don't have these things. You know, but anyway, somehow or the other, these four personalities, they come together, and then they encourage each other, and they reach places in their consciousness where they would have not gone otherwise. So the journey of Krishna consciousness is not something that we can just, you know, do it by ourselves. We of course need to participate. You know, our participation is absolutely essential, and then we need others also. other devotees, other living entities even, actually anyone, everyone, that is in our life, whether they are devotees or non-devotees, they are there for a specific reason. Krishna has put them for a specific reason for us to learn something. For example, I'll give you an example. Nowadays, they have these things called, adaptive curriculum. So some of these tests actually, some of the standardized tests like, the GRE and the SAT and so on and so forth, way back when I took them, they would be just like, pen and paper. We would get a question paper and then you would, answer. But now from what I understand, many of these tests are actually, they're adaptive. So you are with the computer and then, the computer, the assessment, you get a certain questions first, right? And then you answer them. And based on how you answer them, the degree of difficulty, either goes up or goes down, and then there are weightages for each of these, questions that you're answering. So anyway, the point I'm making is, so it's adaptive, the testing mechanism. Similarly, even in the schools now, what they have is they have these, computerized based learning, where they assess through various softwares, they assess where a particular child is, in their, learning, and what is it that they need, what is it that they're lacking, And then specifically, the curriculum then is tailored specifically for that, child. So similarly, so each of us, we have a unique journey of Krishna consciousness, And in a way, nothing is happening by chance. The people that are there in our life, the circumstances that we are facing in our life, nothing is happening by chance. So Krishna, He is personally orchestrating that. We also understand this, that Krishna, He takes personal interest in the lives of His devotees. I mean, He takes interest in everyone, but specifically when somebody expresses a desire to come to Him, then He takes personal interest. And it is, as I said again, it's an act of compassion. And sometimes, the circumstances or the people that, He will put in our life, like we are wondering, like, why, why Him or this, why not something else? Yeah. But that's exactly what we need, in that specific time to grow further in our Krishna consciousness. So then when we sort of stop asking the question in a way, why me or why this, but the question changes to, like, okay, how does Krishna want me to serve in this situation? How does Krishna want me to, be Krishna conscious in this situation? Then we are acting in the relationship. We are acting in the relationship, or we are ready to, act in the relationship. That Krishna, I don't want to change, the circumstance or the situation, but, what is it that you want me to do? Please give me an indication. And then Krishna can speak through scriptures, He can speak through other Vaishnavas. However it happens, Krishna speaks that. So Krishna consciousness is about being in a relationship, on a moment-to-moment basis, with the Supreme Lord, with others. Then, those same challenging situations, those same circumstances, same people, they become the source of our purification. We tell Krishna, I want to come to you. And as Prabhupada writes in his purports, to enter into the sun planet, one has to be of the quality of the sun. Otherwise one cannot. For example, to swim in the waters, like the fishes, one has to have a body that is conducive, to be in an aquatic environment. Or if one has to fly, then the body has to be suitable. So similarly, one has to enter the sun globe, Prabhupada writes, one has to be like the sun, So there are fireproof bodies. We think there is no life in the sun, but there are fireproof bodies. Like there are waterproof bodies, there are fireproof bodies, and they're there. So similarly, to enter into, the spiritual realm, one has to be, absolutely, clean, squeaky clean, pure. Of course, we still remain infinite, like infinitesimal. We don't become God. But in quality, we regain our Sachidananda, our nature. And the Supreme Lord, You know, He orchestrates all these circumstances in our life. So He's inviting us actually that don't, give in to these, flickering, happiness that you're getting. It's here today, gone tomorrow, And largely our life is spent in trying to keep what we have or go for what we don't have, and life slips away. But when we, experience the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, then, we invest faith, in the philosophy and in the practices, and we keep going. And even the challenging circumstances that Krishna puts, in our life, we are ready to face them, We actually, as Queen Kunti prays, we welcome them, And most of us will actually agree that when we look back, in that time, when we are going through some circumstance, it's very, very, painful and, and so on and so forth. But when we look back in that particular circumstance, we actually usually are thankful for it. And, in a way, we would not have it in any other way. We understand, the mercy of Krishna. We see the mercy of Krishna, when we look back. Yeah. So these circumstances that Krishna creates in our life, they are, in a way, they are like what Prabhupada tells. When the mother has to administer a medicine to the baby, sometimes, then she has to pinch, the baby. The baby is sleeping, for example, let's say. And then the one time the medicine has to be administered, then the mother pinches the baby. So it seems like an act of cruelty, or like that. But then behind the pinching, there is an act of welfare. So she wants to administer the medicine so the child can be, cured. So similarly, the Supreme Lord, His mercy can appear otherwise. And so these circumstances, adverse circumstances especially, they are for our, ultimate reform. So that's one thing that I wanted to share. Another is, here Prabhupada is also talking about, daydreams and night dreams. Yeah. So most of us, we don't realize, the night dreams we can understand that actually it was a dream, but the daydreams, we don't get a sense that it is a dream. But then when we, read from scriptures, when we look back at our own life and we look at others' lives, we understand actually better. So, so Prabhupada here rewrites in the first paragraph, last sentence. Rather, the best course is to engage the mind in the service of the Lord Rishikesha and thus feel real blissful life. Yeah. So we've tried this. Like, this is like the chewing the chewed. We've tried to enjoy this material world, for so many lifetimes. And there is always something that we think we have not yet experienced, and we want that. But then it's like a spider weaving a web and then getting caught in its web. So we sort of further implicate ourselves in this repeated cycle of birth and death. But then the scriptures and the process of devotional service is encouraging us to take the devotional service, experience, higher taste, experience the bliss of Krishna consciousness. And through, as I said earlier, through the engagement of these blunt senses, the atindriyas, the transcendental senses that are there, within, they awaken. And then one performs devotional service using those transcendental senses, like we hear in the scriptures, and then devotional service begins. So we are currently performing vidhi sadhana bhakti, so we are engaging our senses, our mind, our intelligence in the service of Krishna. And then as we do those things, then those senses, the mind and the intelligence, they become purified, they become spiritualized, and their spiritual counterpart, that comes through. Like we were discussing there last week, you know, Prabhupada did not emphasize so much on, dissolving our false ego, because that's the first thing to come and the last thing to go, actually. So he encouraged us to act on the platform of our real ego, which is that I'm a spirit soul, I'm a servant of Krishna. And by acting in devotional service, we will actually understand, you know, that how we are under the influence of the false ego. So he didn't put so much energy there. On the other hand, he positively wanted us to engage, you know, everything in the service of Krishna, beginning with the mind. And then the realization comes, you know, that I'm not the body, I'm a spirit soul. Not only I'm a spirit soul, I'm actually a servant of Krishna. Like that. So, and then the transcendental senses, they become awakened. There are many verses, like Srila Rupa Goswami, he writes in Padyavali, especially with respect to the holy name. He says when, you know, there is a stage of chanting which he experiences, where he just says that there is so much ecstasy in this, in the two syllables, Krishna, that I aspire to have millions of tongues and millions of ears, because I'm not able to, you know, serve, you know, Krishna or relish the holy name by just having one tongue and two ears. And then there are other verses where he also talks about how when even Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes about these things, when, I'm trying to find the right words, how the material senses, how they become actually, they become numbed. Numb not in the way that we are used to, but really they become numb in the sense that they stop, you know, hankering, they stop disturbing us. There is a stage of Krishna consciousness where, you know, the mind becomes completely peaceful. We were reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, like the example that is given is, you know, the ghee lamp in the aarti when we offer. So where the flame, you know, is burning, and then eventually when all the, you know, the ghee is absorbed, is used, then the flame goes out. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that it's not that, you know, the flame disappeared, but in a way the flame, the law of energy, the conservation of energy, the flame is now withdrawn and it is there, you know, it's stored in the ghee wick, which is mostly burnt already. But then it is, you know, it is conserved. So similarly, the law of conservation of energy is applicable even to, you know, the mind and the intelligence and the senses. So as we also hear, to the degree that the spiritual mind is awakened, you know, the material mind, you know, is, you know, put to sleep, you know, like that. Or spiritual intelligence, there is vyavasayatmika buddhir and there is avyavasayatmika buddhir, like that. So it's not we want to become mindless or devoid of intelligence, but the material intelligence, the material mind, the material counterparts, they subside, and their spiritual counterparts, they awaken. Same thing like the false ego and the real ego. We cannot, annihilate the ego. Ego is there, but the spiritual counterpart is awakened. Similarly, the senses, they have their spiritual senses, atindriyas, that is being talked about here. That. So in this body, the senses are spiritualized, and then eventually, when we go back home, back to Godhead, then we have a spiritual form. We have a spiritual body, we have a spiritual form, spiritual senses. So I wanted to pause here and see if anybody would like to say something, ask anything. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. I had a question about Prabhupada says here in the purport that... Can you hear me?
Where is Himanshu?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, okay, right behind. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you for your class. I had a question about, so Prabhupada says here, one should therefore not imagine, so, well, he says, whatever distress or happiness we manufacture by mental concoction through the subtle mind has no reality but is simply a mental concoction. One should therefore not imagine so-called happiness through mental concoction. So I find that it's, if someone is like struggling with some issue, then it's very hard for them to have that perspective that actually this happiness or rather this distress is simply a mental concoction. So then how do you, since you do a lot of emotional care, how do you sort of balance the two sides? Like on one hand, you want the devotee to make advancement and understand this is just a concoction, but at the same time, you know that this is very hard for them to sort of do, you know, but you have to sort of help them do both. I mean, how do you sort of balance the two?
Okay, so let me just repeat the question. One second. So you're referring to, whatever distress or happiness we manufacture by mental concoction through the subtle mind has no reality, but it is simply a mental concoction. Okay, so your question is, when we are in that difficult circumstance, it does feel like a reality, right? Yeah, it doesn't seem like a mental concoction. So how does one help a devotee who is going through that difficult circumstance? Yeah. I think we discussed this a little bit the other day. Counseling, when it comes to like grief counseling, we were discussing this a few days ago, last week. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that preaching means not just platform speaking, just getting on a pedestal and then speaking philosophy. And then that's it. But he discusses how one has to get down in the trenches, with the conditioned soul who is in that suffering, place, and then extricate them. So this is an important aspect of devotee care. So of course there is transcendental knowledge is definitely there, which is our ultimate shelter, process of devotional service. But then we also find that for the long term, at least for the long term, well-being of a devotee, there is merit in, addressing these issues on the level of the emotions. If there are emotional issues that somebody has, then one helps address them. And we have to sort of first understand different things actually. Srila Prabhupada always explains that the thoughts are associated with the mind. And then he explains that emotions or feelings, they are connected to the heart. So there is a saying that emotions or feelings, they need expression. And thoughts need limits. You follow? So most of us, we get confused. We even we say, I feel, something. But actually it's a thought, but we use the word feel. So it's all sort of muddled up. So when Srila Prabhupada here is discussing about mental concoction, so there are so many thoughts that are going on. There are some funny videos as well where, some person, they go to a therapist and they say that I feel that, I'll be buried alive in a box. Okay. So it's like a funny kind of a therapy. And he says, okay, I'll give you two words. So he says, stop it. But she said, that's all? But then, of course, she goes on and on. She says, I'm very scared when I go into an elevator or anything. You know, if I find myself in a place which is boxy, she says, oh, so you're claustrophobic. Oh, okay. So, and then he asks her, has anything like this ever happened to you? Has anybody tried to bury you alive in a box, literally? And she says, no. So, at one level, we need to limit, there has to be a limit to our thoughts. But then, at another level, these feelings that are there, they come from someplace. Either in this own life we have some experience, or, you know, from who knows where. There is value in, you know, in exploring those, for those that are interested. So that our mind, you know, our intelligence, you know, our heart, our soul, our body, they're all in alignment. You know, because when let's say we have a car, if any of the four wheels are, you know, out of alignment, then the car swerves to the right. So His Holiness Sachinandan Maharaj was giving one class, he was speaking like this actually. He was sharing his own, he was giving his own example. Saying when he was very young, around 10 years or so, so he had gone to a place and I think there was a garage sale or something. Something like that. So he found a beautiful, you know, red bike. And he found, you know, the red bike. And so he paid for the red bike and it was just like his proud possession. He was very, very excited, young boy, getting a bike. And then so he was riding his bike, you know, into his subdivision, you know. And as he was coming into his subdivision, he was riding his bike. So he was very, very ecstatic. And his friends were around. And then so, you know, he let his hands go off the bike to exclaim in jubilation. And then all of a sudden, you know, the bike sort of goes and he's in a ditch, you know. So he was saying that I did not know, you know, that the bike was sort of, you know, pulling to the right. And it was what was supposed to be a very, you know, like an exciting moment, you know, turned out to be quite embarrassing in front of his friends. So he was explaining that sometimes, so when we are going in spiritual life, sometimes, you know, some of these things, they come, they're like sort of ambushes, we don't even know where, you know, they're coming from. And he was explaining, you know, the value of, you know, looking at these things. Sometimes we use, you know, philosophy, you know, it's called something called like a spiritual bypass. We think, you know, we have, you know, dealt with it, but then it shows up again. Devotees who are skilled in both areas, who know the principles of healing. And then, because overall, we want everything to be in line, our head, our heart, you know, everything to be in line. Yeah. Yes. So it depends on time, place, and circumstance. So many things are there. Yeah, relationship with the person. Yeah.
I mean, this is such a huge topic, not to make like a seminar out of this Bhagavatam class, but thank you so much for that answer. But just on this one point about aligning the mind, body, and heart, and the soul, I'm just wondering, since you also use this analogy of how our senses and our mind is quite contaminated, and so by the process of devotional service, the senses become purified, the mind becomes purified, so that the spiritual senses awaken, the spiritual mind awakens. I'm wondering if for a conditioned soul should try and align his mind, body, and soul. It's a nice idea, but is it really even possible? Because his soul is clearly, you know, wanting to be with Krishna. But his mind is clearly wanting to enjoy matter. And his heart is clearly filled with so many experiences of having been frustrated with trying to enjoy matter. At least the way the Bhagavad Gita explains is that really our only hope is a strong intelligence. That if the intelligence is fixed on a transcendental goal, then you may be able to align your transcendental your intelligence in your soul, whereas the mind and heart are still attached to material experiences. And then Krishna tells Arjuna that you should just tolerate those things and then keep your intelligence fixed in the transcendental perspective. So I'm wondering if this idea of trying to align a mind, body, and soul for a conditioned soul, is that even a reality? For a transcendentalist, I can see how that would work, because his heart, mind, body, soul, everything is completely Krishna conscious. so he can actually align them. But I'm wondering if for a conditioned soul that's even possible.
Well, it's impossible to do it alone. Same, it's the same principle. It's not, even to do these things, one has to be in relationship with others who are doing it. So this, yeah, that. And then also one other point, you know, intelligence, when we talk about intelligence, most of us, we have an idea. We are talking about, you know, the cerebral intelligence. Srila Prabhupada, even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking about just tesam satati yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam meenamam payantite. Then Prabhupada says the intelligence is the next door neighbor of the soul. So the intelligence that Krishna is speaking about, he's speaking about the intelligence connected with the heart. And of course that's another topic, you know heart and like that. So what we are discussing, when we are saying aligning, or the intelligence that you are speaking about, if that intelligence is, you are paying attention to your heart, I would trust that. If that is the intelligence that we are cultivating, you know, then yeah, that's trustworthy, that's more trustworthy. Then sort of we just sort of bypass, you know, we don't pay attention to what we are, sort of, we numb ourselves, and we keep going. Yeah. Yeah. Hare Krishna. Yeah. Bhakta, look.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Just kind of a short comment. The idea of emotional or psychological health, I understand it as just being the mind situated in goodness. Whereas a person whose mind is more dominated by ignorance, then he would be disaffected or disconnected or unaware of his emotional states, like disconnected from them. And in passion, one would be overly influenced by his emotional states. Whereas in goodness, one is fully conscious of his emotional state, but he's not dominated by that. He's not controlled by that. So then, in terms of bhakti yoga, whether or not we can just use the intelligence to force our way, or kind of mechanically, because intelligence is a mechanical function. You know, bhakti requires emotional engagement. Otherwise, it's not loving devotional service, it's mechanical devotional service. And the intelligence can only do that. It's accepting and rejecting on the principles of logic and analysis. So, those are just some thoughts.
Yeah, again, the intelligence, which one we are talking about.
That's right, yeah, that's a good point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for a wonderful class. This goes along the same points of the class and the point Himanshu was making. Some points I'd like to appreciate. Maybe you have some thoughts on them. Some points I brought up before, that Anuttama Prabhu, he brought up the term responsibility is divided into two words, response
ability, and
ability. So our ability to respond to various circumstances can either lead to our elevation or degradation. And this goes directly in a point of Hrishikesha in the Gita. That's what I was looking up during class, is that in the Gita, it reminded me of in chapter 7, verse 8, where Krishna says, I am the ability in man. So my understanding from all my various teachers is that our responsibility ultimately depends on our humility. And this brings to mind one particular story that Jitendra told me a few years ago, or maybe a year or two ago, is that, and I'll contrast it with Haridas Thakur, so it won't be, you know, like a mundane story. So he explained that one brahmachari who was living in the temple at the time, one Madhiji came up to him for whatever particular service, and he said to her, "You see this saffron color? It means I don't have to talk to you." Then, you know, soon after, you know, he fell into sense gratification. So this reminds me of this point, Hrishikesha, Krishna controls our senses, and that's why I kind of like to contrast with the Haridasa core pastime, because We see when he came up to the prostitute, he never judged her. He wasn't like you're a prostitute, get away from me, you're disgusting. We kind of, so from 1 week, if he was to judge her, he'll go from Namacharya to the Kamacharya, how to teach us how to fall down. And so maybe you could explain, expand on these points, how it can be discouraging to control the senses, but a lot of times we think that, you know, we only need the mercy of, let's say, pure devotees to control our senses, especially a Diksha Guru. But my understanding is that we ultimately need the mercy of impure devotees, not in the sense of directly giving them mercy, but in the sense of avoiding Vaishnava aparad or offenses or any aparads, whether they're Vaishnavas or not. So maybe you could explain that point a little bit, if you like.
Yeah, well, or not just, Vaishnava aparad, or we need, as I was sharing earlier, in interactions with others, all the people that we're interacting with, they are instruments of Krishna to bring something to our attention. For example, let's say, an impure devotee, he talks to us harshly. Okay, and then we get disturbed by it. So we can say that, well, that's his problem. I mean, if he did not speak to me harshly, I would not be bothered by it. So it's his issue. But then there are so many levels of looking at that. Well, why is this person speaking to me harshly? Or is it possible that, I have done it to somebody else or even him? That's a possibility, like that. So actually the Sangha of Vaishnavas, I have seen it repeatedly, they actually bring to our attention what is it that we exactly need to see. It's easier to blame them, but actually they are the ones, who are actually bringing to our attention what we need to see. I can give examples. Just the same example, so how is my speech when I'm speaking to others? How is my speech? I should perhaps, I should meditate, I should reflect as to how is my speech. Each one of us, every exchange that we have is not by chance. The devotees that we come in contact with, or even our family members, if some of us are married, our husbands or wives or children, they are specifically there to purify us. Grihastha ashram, for example, is a place for purification. So is Brahmacharya ashram. And purification doesn't just come from hearing and chanting. Actually, when we, interact with others, hearing and chanting is like, yes. And then when we're interacting with us, that's how practically we're applying the principles of Krishna consciousness. So we actually know, how much, how Krishna conscious we really are or not.
Thank you. Can I read 1 2-second quote by Bhaktisiddhanta that, in regards to your point just now, you said Shravanam Kirtan, we just don't get purified from Shravanam Kirtan, but interacting with devotees to see how really Krishna conscious we are. So I wrote this down before class because I looked at the verse and it was relevant. It's from Volume 1 of Bhaktisiddhanta by Bhav. The chapter is called Revolutionary Preacher of Truth. It's on page 149. So Bhaktisiddhanta says, when Bhagavan is merciful to me, he arranges unlimited persons to speak sour words in uncountable ways, simply to teach me tolerance. One who cannot learn to tolerate the cables of the world is ineligible to chant Hari Nam. So, Hare Krishna.
Yeah. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's, one of the top teachings. In many, many bhajans also is written where he says that the most, dangerous thing for the conditioned soul, living entity is, when it is praised. I think recently we were hearing a story where, there was this person who would be very critical of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Again and again he would criticize him. And then, of course, some of his disciples, they would try to, interject and somehow put sense into this man. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he did not even encourage it, actually. And then one time, one day this gentleman, I guess from Bhaktisiddhanta's perspective, this gentleman, he passed away. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, so the devotees were celebrating, wow, this sinful person is dead. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was concerned. I said, oh, who will correct me now, because this is one person who was critical of me. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he understood that actually praise, many of his bhajans, he writes, is like poison, it's like pig's stool, pratishtha. It causes, the fall down. And on the other hand, he encouraged, criticism. But we can't imitate, we'll be finished. We like praise, we don't like criticism. So, anything else? Okay, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Please accept my humble obeisances.